And now, live from the Eagle Newsroom in Bryan, it's Aggie Nation, covering Aggie football since the first game in 1894 and every game since. Talking all things A&M and all the pro and high school sports you want to hear. Aggie Nation on Sports Radio 1150, The Zone.
Hey, Aggie Nation is brought to you by MSC Opus. I just went to the website right now to see what's coming up at MSC Opus. That's mscopus.org. You want to find out all about it, see Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. That's an old deal. The Million Dollar Quartet, Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins. You know, and that's a pretty good, it's a tribute to that bunch. Tony Bennett's going to be here.
Yeah, I figured they were there.
Yeah, they're not actually there. No, none of those. Although Elvis is probably out there somewhere. I mean, did you ever see the movie Bubba Hotep where Elvis was living in a... And
you ask me the weirdest questions all the time.
Well, Elvis is living in a retirement home in East Texas, and he solves a supernatural murder. I mean, it's very cool.
So it's not Bubba like Hotep. One of his normal...
No, it's not Elvis. Elvis is not actually
it's
in
not
it.
It's actually...
Bruce Campbell is playing Elvis in this, and it's a weird show. So if you get a chance to see it. All right, you and I, Richard Kroom, we have solved A&M's men's basketball problems. I think we should get the women going in the right direction now, and everything ought to be good. Aggie's playing really good. I saw a thing today where I've seen them speculated as right now, and there's a lot of basketball still to be played, being a number three seed, even a number two seed.
Oh my gosh,
and to me, that's a pretty good tribute, but it also tells me that it's not just here and it's not just the SEC. Even nationwide, people are beginning to realize what a good basketball team this is.
Yeah, I mean, well, they're on ESPN the other night, and that always helps. But
yep.
And when you I mean, I don't say it with ease, but the second half was definitely with ease.
Yep.
the way they handled LSU, which is a, you know, what do you call them, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type team. You know, they can look really, really good or really, really bad. But lately they had been not really, really good, but at least better and more consistently better. And then in the first half they looked like that team. But in the second half, A&M clamped them down with a defense, and they went back to what I think is part of their problem. They weren't taking good shots, and they don't normally play great defense. They played a little better in the second half. LSU, the first half, I've never seen a team not defend the interior the way LSU did, if that's a way to say that, because I mean, it looked like I could have almost posted up. I know I couldn't have. I'm obviously exaggerating, but I mean,
yeah, you're more of an outside three-point kind of gunner, right?
Well, I'm usually the guy that throws the pass, but
you're the inbound man,
yeah,
right?
Davis and Jones were, I mean, they had their way. I mean, I think Jones took one little jumper, and the rest of the time, you know, they were either dunking it or laying it just off the rim. I mean,
if
you'd have measured how far they had to shoot for every basket, it would have been less than 3 feet for the whole half.
You know, a lot of these you're talking about, they didn't look good. They reverted back to the bad LSU in that game. And I think the other part of that is a lot of teams that A&M is playing are starting to do that. They're reverting to their bad version, which might mean that's the Aggies are playing
Aggies,
that well,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, what you're seeing now is what, you know, we've seen with A&M all the time. A&M, you thought, well, they got a decent team. They, you know, they can do this and that. But then there'd be like a 6 or 7 minute spell where they wouldn't do anything, and it would cost them the game. And now A&M does that to the other teams because the other teams, like we've talked about before, seems like they have 3 or 4 players that are good. And if they don't, you know, if one or two of those guys aren't playing well, then they struggle to score. A&M has 7 or 8 guys that can score, 7 at least.
Yeah.
So if one or two guys are struggling or get, like the other night, Caruso gets in foul trouble. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it hurt them a little bit. But, I mean, they still scored 38 points in the first half when he was in foul trouble. I can't remember if it's 38, 34, 34, 30, but they're up by four.
I just absolutely love Caruso's game, and I'm not going to kid you. I mean, I saw him at the high school level today and him consolidated. I thought he was a good player when he was a sophomore in high school. I don't know that I've ever seen a guy go get that much better in 1 year than he did from his sophomore to his junior year in high school. And what always instill that to me is people talk about, oh, he's got a great assist guy, he does this well. His court awareness is as good as anybody I've been around. He sees every aspect of the game, and he plays really every aspect of the game extremely well. And I've been a Caruso fan. I've had a chance to talk to him when he was competing in track and as well as in basketball.
It's funny you say that because if you go to their practices, I don't know about how often, but I've seen him at least three or four times with an A&M consolidated track.
Yeah, he was a high jumper.
Yeah, yeah, he's got his A&M consolidated track shirt on as his practice jersey.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
that's cool. And I can remember talking to him at, like, district track meets. We'd be over at Copper's Cove or something like that.
He'll talk to you because he knows sports.
Yeah, he does.
And he loves to talk it.
Well,
and he knows all sports.
And I think that's the big picture thing. He sees the game in a big picture way, too. And I love watching him play because I just love that aspect of his game that he sees so much of it. If you want to text us, our number is 229-1939. You can call at 693-1150. And I thought, A&M's playing so well in the SEC, and I think they have put themselves in position for a good spot. But they won a couple of Big 12 games last night that were, I thought, pretty good. In Baylor's win in the Texas with the upset over West Virginia last night. I thought both those, I remember Aubrey talking about this at one time. You need to pull for Baylor and you need to pull for Texas. And he says, I know that's going to be a hard thing to do. And I think the Texas game came so early in the year, I don't know that we paid that much attention to it. And I don't know.
It was still
football
and it was like, 1,500 miles away.
Right, right.
But I
do think, and I think Texas may not make the NCAAs. They might because they've got a strong history, and Shaka Smart's got a strong history as well. So,
well, and they're playing a lot of good teams.
They're
going to play a lot in conference. So,
right.
So if they can just have if they can win 20 and another team wins 20, they're probably going to have the edge over that other team almost for certain.
Well, I thought anytime West Virginia was just moved up in the polls. They were up to number six because of the quality of people that they've been playing and doing well against. And
there were a few teams. Every week there seems to be a few teams that lose. Last week there were three teams in the top 10 that lost twice.
Right.
Not just once. They lost twice.
What you're saying is it ain't easy to stay up there.
That's right.
Right. I just think though what this does is legitimize A&M's. A success in the SEC, and I think we can look at it now, and quite frankly, I think this is just a good basketball team. I think they're the favorites now in the SEC. Clearly, they are if you look at the record. And I look down the stretch, I think they've got a shot to do some really great things ahead. And the higher you get, when those guys get in there and they get in that room, say, are they a number three or a number four? Are they a number three or number two, or do we consider them for number one? It's got to look better that you played this kind of people and beat them comfortably like they did, for instance, the Baylor. And Baylor just doesn't lose much at home, but they lost big when they played here.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is you really – A&M does need those teams to do well when it comes to that RPI, the way that's figured out,
right.
Like who you beat and who they've beaten all down the line.
It sure gives you a good argument.
Because the SEC, you're not going to gain points winning games in the SEC. Not very many, at least. Because it's, like we've talked before, I think it's a very average league. It's, its star, and its star now is A&M.
Right.
Kentucky's not as good, nowhere near as good. In fact, they're... Some people have them outside the top 25. If you look at enough polls, mm-hmm. Some people have them outside the top 25. Vanderbilt was supposed to be the other team, and they've struggled. Although part of it was because of an injury with a guy Cornette who's now back, so that might help them a little bit. But and then you got South Carolina, who just a lot of people, who unfortunately for them, a lot of people just don't believe are very good because they've been so bad for so long.
Right. Well, once you get in a conference, and there's so much of this is perception. Once you get in the conference, if your perception is you're not the best conference, it's a little bit like the SEC in football. Everybody perceives them to be the best football conference. So you get some advantages by playing teams in that conference, and it's a little bit of a reverse from the basketball
standpoint. Yeah, it's definitely a reverse with the basketball.
I was looking at the Baylor deal.
Because
I thought,
here's the other thing with A&M, you know, and it's nice to have Kentucky at home, you know, because, you know, you have your better chance to win it and all that, and that will lead to maybe an SEC championship. But when you're winning those games at home, it's not as big on the RPI.
Right, right. Well, I looked at the at Baylor. They're now 15-3, and so that's just one of the losses for the Bears. And they have won 15 straight at home, so obviously they're taking care of their business. They had a struggle last night. They had to go double overtime to beat Kansas State 79-72. But it's still a win, and those kind of things, again, indirectly, I think they help the Aggies.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor's, I think, if you look, I'm sure all three, well, obviously you just said it with their home record. I mean, they do not play well on the road, though. So,
right.
I mean, how's that figured into the RPI? I don't know. I couldn't tell you that. But here's something. Okay, A&M plays Missouri, then at Arkansas, and then they got Iowa State here. I honestly think that if they win all three of those games, they'll be no worse than number four in the nation.
I would agree.
And I almost want to say that they're going to be. I almost want to say that they can get to the top, because, and part of that is part of it's them and how good they are. And part of it is they don't face that team, you know, like Kansas. If Kansas goes to Oklahoma, you know, Oklahoma's going to be favored. Vice versa, you know, A&M could be favored in almost every game they play from now on. It'll be interesting to see what the odds makers put them against Iowa State when they host them here.
I would think
they'd be favored just because they're at home.
I think you're probably right. But how big a game does that look like it is? I mean, Iowa State playing here. We were talking about Kentucky, and I think that game's been, you know, been the game everybody's pinpointed for forever. But Iowa State looks like a great game, and throwing that into conference play like they do, I think is boy, what a nice setup for a tremendous basketball game.
Well, I like it because, you know, you get, you know, a lot of the RPI stuff is figured out, you know, like, well, you did this against this team, but that was back in November. Well, you know, you got one weekend here now where it's not back in November, and you got a whole conference playing another whole conference, so, you know, the RPI can be a little bit more legitimate on how good other teams are and how well you're playing against other teams in other conferences. Whereas before, if you didn't do that, you know, by Christmas almost, you were, you know, if you didn't make your noise before Christmas, you know, against other conferences, then you weren't going to do it. And
this had to be thought out maybe by both conferences that you wanted to do it to have something. The change of pace, whatever it is, there had to be some positive reasons for wanting to do it later in the season than they've done in the past. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but I think
too much credit for thinking about that.
Yeah, but that just seems like we can go back to football. The Big 12, you know, positioned all their really good football games at the end of the year against one another, and for their purposes, I thought that was a pretty intelligent move. Turned out to be really good for Oklahoma to get them into the playoffs, but it built up good records, even though some of them were against less than high quality teams early in the season. Made those games late in the year seem awfully important. I'll be fascinated to see if it's gonna stay that way next year, because I don't think it makes as much sense next year. So I don't know. I just think everybody. I think scheduling can be extremely important, and I kind of like this. There are a couple of things that happened in the NBA that I'd kind of like to talk about as well, and both of those involved the Texas teams that played last night. Let's take a break here on Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. We'll talk about those when we return after this.
If you want to ask, when you think of Texas A&M Athletics on the Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Hargrove Insurance, Terry Ruffino, Coldwell Banker, Agtown Realtors, and Atkinson Toyota in Bryan and Madisonville.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Howdy, this is Royce Hickman, President and CEO of the Bryan College Station Chamber of Commerce. On Wednesday, January 27th from 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Chamber will hold its annual Economic Outlook Conference featuring keynote speaker Tracy McDaniel, President of the Texas Economic Development Corporation. The event will focus on changing landscapes, where we've been, where we are going. Topics include our current and projected economy, plus growth in all parts of our community. Wednesday, January 27th at the Hilton, a look into the future from the people making it happen. Call 260-5200 for tickets or visit bcschamber.org. See you there.
Give your truck authority. Texas Truck Riggins will help you hook up your rig the way you want it with a wide variety of truck accessories, spray-in bed liners, grill guards, toolboxes, goosenecks, and more. The best products well within your budget. We can also powder coat patio furniture, old iron beds, and wheels, just to name a few. All with quick turnaround and straightforward answers to your questions. Visit Texas Truck Riggins on South College Street across from the Lake of the Bryan Municipal Golf Course. Find us on Facebook or visit us at txtruckriggins.com.
Need some extra cash? Game Exchange pays more. Bring in your product. We want your product. And we pay more. Looking for old school games? All old school games at Game Exchange are buy two, get one free. Looking for 360, Wii, and PS3 games? Find them at Game Exchange for 20% off. What about Xbox One, Wii U, and PS4 systems? Game Exchange has them for 10% off. Plus 15% off any accessory when you buy a system. Not to mention Skylanders and Infinity, buy one, get one free. Game Exchange between Harvey Washbangers and Yogurtland on Texas Avenue. And check out their Huntsville location.
The BVSO's very own concertmaster Javier Chaparro and his band Salud take to the stage with the symphony for this very special concert. Join us for an exciting evening of romance, jazz, and fun, beginning with Bowling Suite for Violin and Jazz Piano Trio. The symphony will also premiere new works composed by Javier himself, featuring the romantic sounds of South American music and irresistible Latin jazz on Sunday, January 31st at 5 p.m. in Rudder Theater. Tickets are available at bvso.org or by calling 845-1234. The Brazos Valley Symphony Orchestra, making music come alive. Enjoy an enchanted evening with your little lady, Daddy's Little Girl. The Daddy-Daughter Dance returns February 5th and 6th at the Hilton Hotel Ballroom. Friday night is recommended for ages 6 or younger, and Saturday night is recommended for ages 7 and older. Proceeds benefit the Children's Museum of the Brazos Valley. It's a night you will treasure forever, so make your reservations for the Daddy-Daughter Dance now by calling the Children's Museum at 779-5437 or visit cmbv.org.
Listen to Aggie football, basketball, baseball, softball, and soccer on your home for Aggie athletics. The Zone FM, 102.7 and Sports Radio 1150.
Back to Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. Richard, we were talking about the variety of things during the break, and you had an NFL question you thought might be worth
if you want to text something in on this, because I heard some people talking about this today, and it is an interesting concept. The NBA has the NBA D League, which stands for Developmental League. Should there be a developmental league in the NFL? And like, where would you put the teams? You know, like what cities? You know, like the person I was listening to talked about Orlando, Portland. You know these mid-sized. You know, San Antonio.
Why not put some? Yeah. A bunch of them in Texas.
So, what would be good? What would be the problems with that? What, you know? Do you like that idea?
Yeah, would you be up for a developmental league?
Yeah, how could it work?
Correct. If you're going to throw it out there, tell me how would it work? What would you do?
Well, first of all, we kind of talked about this. Is it couldn't be a developmental league where, like, okay, you take them right out of high school and ruin the college game. It would have to be just like the NFL. You have to, you know, just like with the NFL, you have to be there 3 years or a certain age, you know, for being drafted. Because otherwise,
you don't have to be there 3 years now, do you?
Well, you have to be
3 years. I mean, yeah. You can be a redshirt.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's like Johnny, redshirt sophomore.
Right.
But so you wouldn't be able to do that because that would hurt the college game, I believe, because you'd have a lot of kids that just wouldn't go to college. They'd just go straight to this developmental league. You know, it would have to be something like where, you know, everybody plays on a Tuesday night or something like that, so it doesn't interrupt anybody like that.
Yeah, just got to be honest. I thought the D-League for the NFL was called the SEC. So,
yeah.
So,
well, you know,
that.
that's what people say. You know, that's one of the arguments is, well, they already have college. They don't need a D-League. But would it be interesting? Could it make it? Do you, you know,
I've always been fascinated by the idea of having a separate league for guys who don't want to go to colleges. Colleges would hate it.
Yeah,
but
I think that would hurt the college game.
Of course it would. Absolutely. But yeah. But they'd all be paid.
Some say they're all paid now. Anyway, if you have an idea on that, or if you think that's cool, or think there's no way that could work, give us a text.
No, it'd be interesting. Somebody else said that was called the USFL. USFL was a little bit different from that. NFL doesn't want any competition, so they would block it. But
it's not competition.
We're not talking about competition. Related to the NFL.
We're talking about like these teams being a minor league system for the NFL. Like instead of like when you have your cuts from in August from like 74 or 84 or whatever many players it is down to the 53, those guys go into over into another league. Well, of course you couldn't have 32, so you probably have like maybe 16. So each team would maybe share two teams. Players and things like that.
Could you still have
the player.
Would people go see it? I don't know how many people go to the D League. I know Austin's got a D League.
Yeah, but that's a little different with basketball. I think football it could be sold a little bit more. Of course, it also costs a little bit more. That would be the problem there. And you've got a lot of. And here's the other thing. I mean,
Would you take it?
Here's another thing about that. If a city like San Antonio had a D League team and they just showed how phenomenal they're following it and the way they want to be with football, who's to say that they could, that's almost like a, something to show that they could be an NFL team.
Yeah.
San Antonio could host an NFL team.
The Missions was always a great place to go to a minor league game, but they don't have a major league team there either. So, I don't know. I don't know that those things can
Yeah, but something like I come from Denver, and Denver got its team partly because the Rockies, Colorado Rockies, because they had such great attendance, for their minor league team, which was the Denver Bears, the Denver Zephyrs, depending on which one you want, how late you were in looking at that. But, they had great attendance. I don't know exactly what the numbers were, but I know there were a few games there where they do little, because they played at Mile High Stadium. There were a few times where they had little promotional things where they'd sell out, and that's 60,000 people at a baseball game.
Would you do it? Would you also do it as a developmental league where you could call people up, kind of like you have?
Yes, that's exactly
like you have
what
a practice squad now. So you would. You could have New England associated with a team in Phoenix, not Phoenix. Let's say Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I would if you did that, you'd kind of like to try and keep them closer. To where they're like Dallas's would be, could be San Antonio, or Houston could be San Antonio. One of the two teams could be San Antonio.
That also could be a way for the Cowboys, which they're thinking this, to keep an actual NFL team away from San Antonio.
And
that's another topic. So I'm going to get to the NBA maybe the next segment now, but that's the other thing. I had a friend tell me, San Antonio can't be taken seriously as an NFL, somebody considered for an NFL team until Red McCombs gets involved. And apparently Red is involved now in the possibility of the Oakland Raiders making a move to San Antonio. And I wonder if that happened, because they'd have to build a new place for them to play. They don't have any place. They're not going to Alamo Stadium. They're not going to be doing that. I would be fascinated where they would play something like that. And I'm not so sure something between San Antonio and Austin
would make more sense because then you'd get the Austin people as well. Yeah. It's not like that isn't all built up now anyway.
Yeah, you could probably – I'm not even sure that the Alamo Dome is big enough to officially host an NFL team right now. But I guess if it were
most NFL stadiums are smaller than – the bigger college stadiums.
Yeah.
So I think it would be.
I don't see the Alamo Dome being
what was it? Was it 70,000 where A&M played?
Were there that
for Nashville? Wasn't that the attendance?
Oh,
no, that's what they could see. That was it. When I say that was it, I mean in comparison to how many college stadiums can seat more than 70,000.
Somebody pointed out injuries could pile up. A person could have a finite number of games that they could play it, and that's true. But you're getting paid wherever you're doing it. So if you come in, and maybe it's not the pay you would have if you were playing for an NFL team. To me, there could be. I can sort of see the positives in trying to pull something like this together. I don't think the colleges would like it. I think. If you build a stadium for the NFL close to Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium, I don't think they'd be happy in Austin. I might be wrong.
I think you are wrong on that one. I think the only thing, if you did it kind of like what I just said, the only thing that would change with college football a little bit is, I think more players would come out after their junior year because there are more spots for them to play professionally.
Got a point. Somebody pointed out the Alamo Dome hosted the Saints after Katrina, and they said it holds 65,000. I thought it was a little less than that, but that might be right.
Yeah.
And, you know, for over the years, that's not an undersized stadium in the NFL. I mean, that if it is 65,000, but that's an interesting point. You brought up something I never even thought about there, but I think that's got some possibilities there.
I like it.
All right. Somebody says Davis has also reportedly bought land between San Antonio and Austin. I'm not sure I believe that. Of course, I've been hearing for years that Disney has bought stuff in Texas. I don't think that's happening either. I hadn't seen Disney World pop up in Rio Vista or anything like
Buddha.
I don't know, Buddha right? Yeah, maybe the Buddha Raiders. Yeah. That's exactly right. But get them in Lockhart. At least the barbecue would be good. Yeah, that'd be good. Got a lot of possibilities there. All right, I do want to talk about the Mavericks and the Mavericks game that went overtime last night and the Houston Rockets game because of something that happened in the Rockets game. As long as we're changing things around, the Rockets game is a pretty good reason.
Oh, you're gonna change some rules or something?
I don't know that I'm gonna change the rules, but we're gonna talk.
But you're gonna say they should be. I'll tell you if we're gonna talk that with rules, we'll talk about the women's basketball game that happened Sunday too with A&M against South Carolina.
Okay, all right, we'll talk about that, and that'll be coming up next. You're listening to Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle.
News Talk 1620 WTAW. I'm Chelsea Reber with a news update on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM. College Station Police is asking for your help in identifying two men of interest in a theft and credit card abuse case. Photos of the men are online at WTAW.com along with how to contact police. CSPD says one of the men stole a backpack containing, among other things, the victim's Aggie ring and wallet. The credit card was later used in an attempted purchase at the College Station Target by the suspect and a possible accomplice. According to Assistant Police Chief Brandy Norris, the one accused of taking the backpack is someone who likes to take people's property while they work out. The city of College Station has updated its population estimate.
Our latest population, 106,465.
Mayor Nancy Berry on WTAW's The Infomaniacs provided background into the population increase of 4,200 last year.
Staff approved and inspected construction worth $284 million in 2015. We had a record in 2014. We just blew it away by platting 870 residential lots within the city. And we had a record for single-family building permits, 863 of them. That's almost a 15% jump from the previous year.
The city's population estimate is based on certificates of occupancy. Bryan City staff are working on two major pool projects this year. One is at the Bryan Aquatic Center, where Deputy City Manager Hugh Walker says an engineer is under contract looking at how to spend between $600,000 and $1 million.
That's a project that will actually close that pool down for a short period. The improvements that are being suggested are those that really need to be done. It's for safety. Better water quality will take care of the filter and the circulation system and the gutters. So those sort of things that really need to be done, you just have to maintain a pool every now and then.
On WTAW's The Infomaniacs, Walker says the city is getting closer to the start of building the new pool at Sadie Thomas Park.
We really hope that we stick to that schedule, which means it'll be open come Memorial Weekend. And the contractor hopes to break ground sometime this month, and so we're moving forward with that.
Back at the Aquatic Center, Walker says the city will coordinate with the school district when the facility will be closed. For more, go online to WTAW.com. I'm Chelsea Reber on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
When you think of Texas A&M Athletics on The Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Pioneer Steel, Coldwell Banker, Agtown Realtors, and Rudy's Barbecue.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Green Teams welcomes the Texas A&M College of Architecture to its family of customers. Like many other businesses, Texas A&M's College of Architecture uses Green Teams for interior plantscaping. Green Teams also offers short-term plant rentals and features large outdoor containers for plants on patios. Make your work environment more pleasant with plants. For more information about interior plantscaping, call Susie Gallagher with Green Teams, 823-7551. Green Teams.
Give your truck authority. Texas Truck Riggins will help you hook up your rig the way you want it with a wide variety of truck accessories, spray-in bed liners, grill guards, toolboxes, goosenecks, and more. The best products well within your budget. We can also powder coat patio furniture, old iron beds, and wheels, just to name a few. All with quick turnaround and straightforward answers to your questions. Visit Texas Truck Riggins on South College Street across from the Lake of the Bryan Municipal Golf Course. Find us on Facebook or visit us at txtruckriggins.com.
On Sports Talk, Krista admits that when it comes to musical talent, she falls a little short.
Singing is not one of my strong suits.
Really?
No. I was in the choir, but I swore if I ever got a solo, I'd quit.
Everyone in Mineola got to be in the choir if they wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was...
I'm always like they said, no, you're not good enough.
No.
You're good. You're in.
Sports Talk, humming along since 1994. Weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7. 7FM.
I want to get in on this. You can call us here on Aggie Nation at 693-1150 or text us at 229-1939. Interesting texts out there. Have you bought any land between San Antonio and Austin? Are you trying to get in and make the Raiders buy from you? I think that'd be a good idea.
Be a good idea if I could muster it up to start that. But
you'd be the one probably ended up having to go out there and cut those mesquite trees down.
Elementary soccer field out there somewhere.
Yeah. I remember driving down to whatever that road is that runs between San Marcos and Bastrop there, and I was driving down that when they built that stadium out there, the new Bastrop Stadium. I had no idea they were building it, and it was done. And I just drove by there, and I went,
"That's nice."
And I literally turned around and went back to say, "Did I just see a stadium, or did I just sort of envision that when I was going by?" But you can almost build something out there and not even know it's being built. Yeah. There's so much space just kind of out there in a sort of what like it seems in the middle of nowhere. I do like the idea though of getting the Lockhart barbecue in on that deal. That seems pretty workable. All right, the reason I wanted to mention the NBA last night, I thought there were a couple of fascinating things that came up. The Mavericks won in overtime over the Timberwolves, 106-94. Got a good game from Chandler Parsons, who's now beginning to look a little bit like the Chandler Parsons they thought he would be when he came in from Houston, and played really well last night. Dirk Nowitzki was in street clothes. If you live on a street where they wear really nice tall man suits, because he looked really good in the suit last night. But Dirk didn't play at all last night, but Parsons had a good game. This has got to be good for Mavericks fans, I would think. The last four games they have played at home have gone overtime, which matches an NBA record.
I'm sure the beat writer's not real happy about that.
Yeah, we're not. Like, everybody cares about the beat writer. I mean, nobody worries about what we're having to do. But
amazing. I worry about it.
I mean, that's still pretty amazing to get an NBA record out of something like that. I mean, There's no way you can predict anything like that, is there?
I mean, no, there's probably some teams that don't even play four overtime games in the year.
You know, they say that the best part of the NBA is watch the final couple of minutes of the game, and sometimes that's true. And quite frankly, the last two games that the Mavericks have played, I've watched the overtime periods. I watched a little more than that, but I've watched those, and they've been pretty entertaining. That Boston game was really good, and the Mavericks kind of took control of this one against the Timberwolves last night. And I don't know. I just find that stuff a lot of fun.
So instead of, like, watching NBA for, like, 15 or 20 minutes because of the overtimes, you're actually having to put in almost an hour's worth of watch.
That's like true. The 2 minutes is the first 35 of that. Yeah, that's exactly right. But that's okay. You know, I find myself – we had somebody asking about where you see the Spurs. By the way, they're going to be on TNT tonight. So if you want to check the Spurs out, they're playing – at Phoenix tonight.
At Phoenix? Okay.
Yeah, so they will be on TNT last night. All right, here's the other thing that I wanted to throw out because of the possibility.
Is this your ruling thing?
No, this is not. I'm not going to make a ruling on this. Okay. I'm going to leave that up to Commissioner Silver or somebody else to make the call on this. But Detroit last night, Andre Drummond missed
the 23 free throws.
Yeah, and he broke Wilt Chamberlain's record of 22.
But you know who else's record he broke?
No.
Because it was a tie. Okay. He broke Mr. DeAndre Jordan's record.
Oh, is that
DeAndre
right?
Jordan held that as well.
Who is the –
because he had it earlier this season. In other words, both of those, Jordan and Drummond, have done it this year.
Well, the crazy thing is the Pistons won the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they ended up winning the game, although – I think there was a stretch in the game where the Rockets fouled him 12 times in a row coming down court. Now, overtime games are fun. Tell me that's fun. That can't be good basketball to watch.
The only thing that would be fun is if it happens like once every couple months. You know, kind of like the uniqueness of it. But, I mean, if you start seeing that all the time, then it is definitely not fun.
Well, Houston has Dwight Howard on the team, so they've seen this on the other aspect of the game.
What was it? Was it you I was talking to the other day? No, I think it was another guy in the office. Houston was playing the Clippers. And what's funny is it did go to overtime.
Yeah.
But I said – Clippers were winning by like 15 at the time. And I said, you know, it would be great is if there was an overtime game between these two. If you had like a shootout like in hockey and you had DeAndre Jordan against Dwight Howard at the free throw line, let them take three free throws. If someone makes, you know, someone makes more than the other, then that team wins. And if not, then they each take a fourth one. If one makes it, one doesn't, that team wins. I like that.
All right. Well, if you change the rules, though, and I'm actually not proposing changing the rules, I think learn how to shoot a free throw. I mean, I think if that's the strategy, that's okay. But, you know, we change rules in the NFL just to get a little more offense or to make it more difficult to kick an extra point. The NBA could change rules in this situation. I mean, what would you do? How would you change that to put that in effect?
Well, I mean, someone said, I've heard this, is if you're going to do that, right now they can't do it at a certain time, right? Once they get to 2 minutes, they get the ball. Make that just longer. I mean, like, if you foul DeAndre Jordan in the last 6 minutes of each half, he gets to shoot the free throws and the Clippers get the ball. Away from the ball. I'm talking about away from the ball.
How about this other aspect of it? What if you make it we'll keep it within a certain portion of the game. What if you make it you get to decide whether you want two free throws or the ball.
That'd be another thing you could do.
I just wonder whether.
Because then you wouldn't do it. Because obviously, in Drummond's case, you would decide to keep the ball. And so all you're doing is piling up fouls on your players.
Why did some of these big guys, we talk about it. It was known as Hack-a-Shaq when Shaquille O'Neal first started.
Well, I guess they did it with Wilt Chamberlain to some extent.
Well, they did to some extent to Chamberlain. The difference with Chamberlain, and I don't think they did it quite as much with Wilt back in the day. Because Chamberlain would come back and embarrass you in an extremely unfortunate way, because he was that good. I mean, he could do things like that, and Wilt sometimes would hit free throws, but he tried everything in the world. He shot them granny style. He tried, and I wonder if it's the guys with those great big hands. I mean, I wonder if that's part of the deal. It's like
That's what Shaq always said. You know, it's just the ball sits in that hand like that. But, you know, what's funny is, talking about Wilt Chamberlain, is when he scored his 100 points, I don't have the numbers exactly with me, but look what he shot free throws that day. It was amazing.
I know this.
You do know it?
Pull this off the top of my head. He had 28 of 32.
Yeah. See, and normally he was a 50% free throw shooter at best.
Yeah.
But the day that he scored 100 points, 28 out of 32.
I'm a big believer, if you want to pinpoint some of the greatest players in the game, and this is the negative. This is sort of the flip of that. Find guys that they change the rules for. And Wilt was one of those guys they changed the rules for. At the college level, they made it illegal for you to jump from the free throw line and dunk the ball, which is what Wilt was doing. So they changed that rule so you couldn't do it anymore. Also at the college level, when Lou Alcindor, who would become Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, was playing, dunks were illegal. You couldn't dunk during a game. So all they did out of that was probably create the greatest shot in basketball history, the skyhook. I mean, I don't know that sometimes
it's kind of like I always go back to golf. Everyone knows that it's kind of like Augusta changing the course for Tiger,
right?
When Tiger just dismantled Augusta and won the Masters.
Yeah, they made it longer and
they did whatever they could to try and make
it
longer.
Guess what? He hit longer than anybody else anyway.
Well,
so.
At that point, yeah, but I don't think that would be true anymore. I mean, even if Tiger came along now at his best, he still would be, you know, I won't say average, but I mean he wouldn't be longer than everybody else.
Right.
I mean, you know, you got Dustin Johnson, even Rory McIlroy, you know, all those guys, they could probably hit it like Tiger did when Tiger was at his best.
You know,
of course, you can't compare those things, partially because of the equipment.
I can't go back to the Wilt Chamberlain days and remember as many games because you didn't see as much basketball on TV back in those days. I did see Wilt play, and to me...
Yeah, even the 100-point game, they don't have very much on that at all.
Which they played in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
As Wilt used to say, that he said, you know, the attendance figure was like 8,000-something that were there. And he says, and I've talked to at least 50,000 who saw it. And Chamberlain used to say that. The thing about Chamberlain was, Bill Russell used to say, they say, what would he do in today's game? Would he be able to be that good? He said he probably would have averaged 20 more points and, you know, 15 more rebounds a game. I mean, I really do believe he played in the era. I'm kind of curious. Because I think Golden State's a great team. I think San Antonio's a great team this year. I think two just outstanding teams. I wonder, you know, where you put guys over eras like that. I believe the two best basketball teams that I personally have witnessed, now I watched them on TV, but that I watched play were the 71-72 Lakers and the, what was that, in the 80s when, I can't remember the year now exactly, when Jordan and the Bulls won 72 games.
Yeah.
I think those are the two best basketball teams I've ever seen. And
I'll tell you what.
In a stretch run, the 60s Celtics were probably up there with anybody.
The Warriors are gonna push both of those teams.
Well,
this
Warriors
year
might get to 72 wins this year.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if they don't the way they're going. I mean, come on, they just beat two of the best teams in the East by more than 30 on the road. Just destroyed them.
And stylistically, they're a completely different type team. I tell you what, I would put in anybody's era, I'd put Steph Curry in there and say that guy could play at any era because he does so many things well and just a spectacular shooter. Now, early days of the NBA, there was no three-point line until the ABA came in and they came in together. So that changed the game a great deal. It really opened it up to get what I think is kind of a boring part of the game, the outside guys driving all the time. I like to see people that can shoot a jump shot. But we're getting more of that. I think we're kind of working our way back. NBA was great at the end of Wilt's era, and then it went downhill because you got it in the 70s. You know, a lot of guys were involved. It was like the cocaine capital of America. It was a bad deal. And it didn't get fixed until Magic and Larry Bird came in and developed that terrific rivalry. NBA's been a hard place to watch games at times. There have been times when basketball's not been very good. But it's pretty good right now, I think.
Well, it's funny you say that about the shots because, like, in college, I think if I was a college coach, I'm not sure I'd let my guys shoot jumpers. It's like shoot a three or you better be able to dunk it or at least, you know, be throwing it in from inside that little – if you aren't inside that little arc which is used for the charge, you know, to call the charge, whether or not it's a block or a charge, you can't shoot it.
Well, that's what – But that's what the NBA became for years and years, and it was an uglier game. It was not a people recognized. Now, guys like LeBron James made the most of it. I mean, they did a terrific job because LeBron could lay off the pass as well. So many things that he could do well. But I just don't think that's as – You don't have the complete skills of the game. You look at the Spurs who pass it around the perimeter and hit jump shots, and they set themselves up for jump shots, sometimes threes. I like that. And I guess I'm looking for the game in the big picture. I'm not sure from a strategy standpoint, I disagree with you. I think strategically that's probably the right thing to do, but I just don't think the game's as pretty when you do it that way.
No, I didn't say that either, but that's what I would do. I mean, I think there were a few coaches, once the three-point line came in college, that were really good coaches, just didn't really adjust to the three-point shot, and all of a sudden they weren't as good of coaches.
Yeah, a difference in how the rule changes came in back in the days when the three-point came in. At the college level, you could always play a zone. At the NBA, you technically couldn't play a zone. A lot of people did,
but they
didn't. They had to disguise it. It was supposed to be a required man to man in the NBA. So I don't know. I like basketball. I like it at pretty much every level. And I'm not so sure I can say that about every sport. I think some sports. I never watch professional lacrosse. I never see it. but some sports.
I think you'd have a lot of people agree with you on that one, in this area especially.
But
I like the sport.
Yes.
I would like to have played that sport.
Well, and a lot. Didn't Jim Brown, wasn't he a lacrosse player?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was a great lacrosse player at Syracuse. Who would want to mess with Jim Brown? It's like who would want to mess with.
Who would slap Jim Brown across the wrist with one of those sticks like they do to the other players?
Yeah, who would have messed with Wilt? I mean, who would those guys could stare you down. They didn't have to even do anything. All right, let's see where we'll go. Who knows where we're going next, because I didn't know where we were going with that one, to be totally honest with you. You're listening to Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle on the Zone.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Huge tax refund sale at Game Exchange. Game Exchange wants your product and we pay more. Bring in your products and get credit or cash. Game Exchange is the best place to shop. Get 10 DVDs for $20. All Blu-ray and box sets, buy one, get one free. All speakers and Beats are 25% off. And all iPhones, Androids, tablets, GoPros, and wearables are 25% off. It pays to stop and shop at Game Exchange. Save money and make money at Game Exchange between Harvey Washbangers and Yogurtland on Texas.
Give your truck authority. Texas Truck Riggins will help you hook up your rig the way you want it with a wide variety of truck accessories, spray-in bed liners, grill guards, toolboxes, goosenecks, and more. The best products well within your budget. We can also powder coat patio furniture, old iron beds, and wheels, just to name a few. All with quick turnaround and straightforward answers to your questions. Visit Texas Truck Riggins on South College Street across from the Lake of the Bryan Municipal Golf Course. Find us on Facebook or visit us at txtruckriggins.com.
When you think of Texas A&M Athletics on the Zone, think of the businesses sponsoring the games of your favorite team.
Businesses like Hargrove Insurance, Terry Ruffino, Coldwell Banker, Agtown Realtors, and Atkinson Toyota in Bryan and Madisonville.
Here's a big gig'em to these sponsors of Texas A&M Athletics. You're listening to the flagship station for Texas A&M Athletics, Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
New quarterback? New offensive coordinator? You need Billy Lucci and Bryce Jones of the Belucci Hour to guide you through these new changes in Aggie football. So be at the tap to watch the Belucci Hour every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1. It's spring ball season, and who better to deliver all the news to you than Billy and Bryce of TexAgs Radio, live and in person. Plus, enjoy the tap's daily lunch specials for only $7.99. Get to the Belucci Hour for the ultimate A&M recruiting updates every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1 at the tap.
You can get scoring updates on all the teams that play on the Bryan Broadcasting family of stations. Just follow us at Sony1150 on Twitter.
Aggie Nation powered by the Eagle. Prior to the time we came on the air today, we were talking about the Australian Open, the kiddos that were on there. We have young kids that sometimes sneak in the studio and do talk about interesting stuff, to be honest with you. Leighton Hewitt called it quits at the Australian Open after his loss yesterday, or maybe that was earlier today.
Country you're in on what day it was.
I always get confused with the international date line and things like that. But Hewitt ended his career. He announced about a year ago he was going to finish in Melbourne and finish things up. He got a 15-minute standing ovation in his home country. That's a I don't think at any point in my life I've got even a sitting ovation of everything that I've done that have accumulated 15 minutes. You know?
Yeah, that 15 minutes is...
That'd be almost embarrassing after a while,
Would,
you know?
Yeah,
I think that would be extremely difficult. But
what would they do if that would have been, you know, because Leighton Hewitt was good.
He was very good. He was number one in the world at one time.
Yeah, but not very long, and
a little while.
Yeah,
before it kind of.
But what if that would have been Rod Laver? The 35-minute standing ovation, because Rod Laver was who the
stadium's named after, Rod Laver. Mm-hmm. Funny, but one of the things they brought up about the
Laver was probably in there clapping for him.
Yeah, the height of the players that play the game today, and I don't remember Rod Laver being a very tall guy.
No, he wasn't. Neither was Kenny Rosewall.
Rosewall and Laver went at it for years and years, and when tennis was in some pretty good glory years when those guys were going at it. What I remember about Rod Laver was he had the biggest right forearm I've ever
seen. No, left.
Oh, that's right.
He's left-handed. He had the biggest left forearm. Yeah, well, they put them next to each other, and it looked like two different
crazy.
People.
That's exactly right. I forgot he was a lefty. That's that's exactly right. Why now do we get the taller players over the guys like that and the McEnroes and the Borgs and guys like that who were smaller, get around the court?
Because now it's just a power game. And if you're taller, you know, it's just like golf. You've got that range to swing, get more – club head speed and things like that. I think that's part of it.
And when's the last time you saw a male player hit a really good drop shot? I don't think anybody can do it. We were talking about that kind of off the air, but I mean, to me, it's there's a matter of changing the rules. Really, the rules in tennis early on kind of said you can pretty much make anything a racket. I mean, anything could be a tennis racket. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was pretty much open. If you wanted to put all kinds of, goofy ornaments on your tennis racket, you could do that. They've changed some of those rules, but we developed into the oversized racket, and we developed into rackets now that you hit, like you said, extremely. Yeah, they're from power. We see guys at the high school level that hit with as much power as some of the pros did at one time.
Mm-hmm. That's why, how long we had them on the air a couple of days ago, how long Coach Denton's record of hardest serve lasted. It was pretty amazing considering that he, with the revolution of the rackets and stuff.
Yeah, Steve Denton was probably hitting in rackets that he had to put into a press so they wouldn't warp, you know, because they were made out of wood. I mean,
I'm going to guess, maybe when he started.
Yeah.
Especially when he started, yeah.
Yeah, but, might not have been
when he was playing pro, probably not.
Yeah, probably not. You know, the first rackets I remember that changed were the T2000 that
Connors played.
Yeah, Jimmy Connors played with. Mm-hmm. And Connors would hit that two-handed backhand down the line, and it looked good. I think probably, and this is just my opinion, that racket benefited by Jimmy Connors holding it more than it did from the fact that it was a great racket. I mean, you know, so I don't know, but that's one of those things. I mean, You could never change the game back to that, but it was an interesting style of tennis when people had to were really hitting more shots. I mean, Borg hit that extreme top spin ball.
I probably got your last guy that hit drop shots at least consistently well. It was probably McEnroe.
Yeah, I would think so. Mm-hmm. And maybe I watch Wimbledon pretty much every year. I like to watch the Wimbledon final if I get an
maybe
opportunity.
Maybe Chang did
a
little bit of that because once again he was not a big guy.
Yeah, he was, but I don't think anybody's kind of caught up to the Borg McEnroe finals that they played at Wimbledon. You still see those things like that, and they were shot makers. Kind of things. I don't dislike the game of tennis now. I just don't think that it's quite the same as it used to be.
Yeah, I don't watch it like I used to. I mean, I used to the Borg days, the McEnroe days. I would make sure I got up to watch certain matches, but I don't do that anymore. And I'll tell you one reason. I've told this to some people, and they kind of laugh. And part of it is I get to watch A&M tennis now.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a whole lot more enjoyable. You know, obviously the tennis isn't as good. But you're watching six matches at one time.
Yeah.
So you're not watching them walk after the ball
right.
And go get the ball and this and that. And you're watching three doubles matches.